Today's episode of the Sidious Mag Podcast on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network is presented by Whoop. We are getting to the heart of fall marathon training season. I see people logging 18, 20, and 22 milers each weekend on Strava. Well, Whoop is here for it. Whoop is a fitness wearable that provides 24/7 personalized insights around your sleep, recovery, and daily activity. Whoop has helped runners of all backgrounds train smarter and recover faster so that they can get to the starting line healthy and hit some new PRs. I'm currently training to pace a friend of mine at the Chicago and New York City Marathon, and Whoop has been a great complimentary guide to my training. Whoop doesn't get your splits or mileage, but instead focuses on the other 23 hours of the day when your body's getting ready for the next run. Each day gives you a personalized recovery score based on things like your resting heart rate, your sleep, and your respiratory rate, so you actually know if you're going to be able to crush those tempo runs and if the legs are feeling good. I've seen Nikki Hiltz, Joe Kovacs, Drew Hunter, and even Gabby Thomas, the Olympic bronze medalist in the 200, has been sharing her Whoop data on Instagram and on Instagram stories. A slew of other professional athletes are wearing it. Now it's your turn. Join now. Join for free. Whoop is offering 15% off with the code Sidious at checkout. Go to Whoop, that's WHOOP.com, and enter Sidious at checkout to save 15%. Sleep better, recover faster, run faster. Get to that next starting line healthy with Whoop. Thanks to the support on Patreon, a special welcome to Felicia Zerzolo and Christine Knox, who have jumped on to back the show within the past week. Your dollars help us pay our new podcast producer, Mike. The funds also go toward planning for major events coming up, like our fall marathon coverage. And then the big year will obviously be 2022 with USA's and then the World Championships in Eugene, Oregon. So if you enjoy what we're doing, support us over at patreon.com/sidiousmag. You can also make a one-time donation by sending any dollar amount that you feel comfortable with to @sidiousmag on Venmo. Another way you can show your love is by picking up a t-shirt or sweater. We've got fall coming up over at sidiousmag.com and hitting the merch tab. We've surpassed 1,000 reviews on Apple Podcasts, but that's never enough. More reviews help us populate onto people's feeds as a recommended show on Apple Podcasts and allows possible sponsors to see what listeners think of the show. It takes less than a minute to leave a review and rating, so I greatly appreciate it if you can do so. So thanks again to everyone who has done that already. My guest for today's episode is Tiana Daniels. She is a professional sprinter for Nike who had a breakout season in 2021 to run 10:83 at the Prefontaine Classic. That ties her for number 14 on the U.S. all-time list. This has been a season where Sha'Carri Richardson has obviously been the number one female sprinter in all of the headlines, but why not spread the love and bring some attention to some of the women who are also running fast behind her? Tiana's number two for the United States in the 100. So in this episode, you'll learn about her upbringing in Florida, where she lit it up as a high schooler. She went on to run at Texas, where she won an NCAA title in the 60-meter dash. As a professional, she was a 2019 U.S. champion in the 100 and went on to finish seventh at that year's World Championships in Doha. 2 years later, she made her first Olympic team and also took seventh at the 100-meter final, where she was the only American woman in the final. She was a member of the Team USA 4x100-meter relay squad that took silver. So we unpack all of that. Plus, she shares her firsthand perspective as to what exactly is happening in the sprints right now, that FloJo's world record of 10:49 may be in jeopardy. So without further ado, here is Tiana Daniels. Now we welcome on Tiana Daniels to the Sidious Mag Podcast, and I think you might be the first 100-meter specialist ever bring on. Definitely have like a strong like distance runner audience. We've been bringing on some throwers, and so kind of, you know, spreading the love a little bit to the sprints, and you're someone who I think definitely deserves a little bit more love after that, you know, 10:8 that you threw down at the pre-classics. So it's been a long year. Are you done finally?
Yes, I'm finished. Yeah, like you said, it's actually really been a long year. And I feel like the COVID year definitely brought itself into this year too. So I know a lot of us athletes are kind of just like, all right, I'm just ready to shut it down for the year.
Yeah, so kind of mentally, it was weird. Pre was definitely different because like I felt like it was a celebratory lap for a lot of people who competed at, like at the Olympics. You got to be in front of fans for the first time. But then now it's sort of like it's been such a long buildup to those Olympics that they finally happened. You get the moment at pre. People have continued going on out to Europe, and then there's still the Diamond League final. I guess, how did you make that decision and like assess that, all right, I think this is all I've got. It was a good note to go out on at pre, and now it's sort of take a little bit of a break. And for a sprinter, what does a break look like before you finally have to get back into it?
Yeah. Well, going into pre, my coach asked me, he said, he was like, are you sure you don't want to do any more Diamond Leagues? And before he got to the last like word of a sentence, I was like, no, I'm done. I was like, I'm finished with my season. I want to just shut it down. We have 3 more years of major championships, indoor and outdoor. So I just wanted to, you know, rest my body and focus on the next step. But my off season, I try to come see my family because I'm originally from Orlando, Florida, but I live in Austin, Texas. So I don't really see them that often. And I've been in Austin since 2015. So that's, you know, 6 years of like back and forth, you know, of being home and being there. But this is the longest I've actually been home in 6 years. I usually like come down for a weekend and go home, but I'm here for 2 weeks. So I'm spending a lot of time with my family, a lot of needed time with my family, actually. So, yeah. And then I'll probably after that go back to Texas, maybe go on a little vacation for myself and get back to it.
Cause there's no cross country season for sprinters. And so like, there's no racing that you have to get back to for like September or like even, but it's funny because if anything, you guys go down and shorter in distance for indoor season and you drop down to the 60s. So what kind of work goes down over the next couple months in like September when it's finally like, all right, time to get back to business?
Yeah. So, technically I'm off for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I don't do anything for 2 weeks, but I don't have to be in front of my coach's face for 6 or 5 weeks. So those last 3 weeks is just me doing like Pilates, going on runs, just kind of prepping myself for fall. Because fall is, we rev it back up. We do like 350s, 250s, grass runs, swimming, bikes, like we do conditioning stuff. But then when we get into, I want to say like late November, early December, that's when we start to like put our spikes on and head up, be on the track.
It's so you've been at this for a while. And I think like a lot of people remember your name from your success on like the Florida high school scene. I guess let's bring people all the way back to the beginning. What made you want to get into track in the first place?
Yeah. Thanks for asking that. But my mom actually got me into track. When I was 8 years old, I was racing against some of the little boys in my neighborhood, and she saw me running with them, and I had on flip-flops just playing around. And then she was like, go put on some tennis shoes. And I was still beating them by even a bigger margin. So she was like, okay, I'm going to put you in the track. So I got into a small AAU track team out here in Florida. And then it just took off from there.
The Florida scene is no joke. I mean, like it's easy to become a star there because especially like on the guy side is, I feel like over the past couple of years, we've seen some phenoms come out of Florida, and there's a little bit of the fact that like someone comes out with a lot of hype, goes to the college system and can sometimes get lost there. The talent doesn't pan out for you because of this consistency to get to this point of like the Olympics, I guess. How did you, I guess, harness it right and like the right amount of not becoming a huge national star right away, but slowly taking the baby steps to get to high school star and then eventually landing at Texas?
Yeah. Oh, thanks for asking me that too. actually, it's crazy you asking that because I was just talking to my mom about it in the car when we were on our little vacation this past weekend. I was saying like, it's just amazing how everything kind of lined up for my decision making leading up to this moment, actually. Mm-hmm. I just feel like honestly what it boils down to is my support system. I had a great support system in AAU, in middle school, in high school, in college. Like I had a great, great support system. My family was there with me the entire way. So they understand and know my journey. But yeah, just that support system kind of keep me grounded and just remind me of like, you know, why I run track. So yeah, I would definitely chuck it up to my support system is the reason why I'm here now.
You're one of seven, right?
For kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So on my father's side, I have three older brothers, an older sister. And on my mother's side, I have an older sister and a little brother and little sister. So, yes.
How competitive is that household growing up?
Oh, gosh. So I was on my, when I was living with my dad, I was the youngest. So like, I was always trying to like keep up with my older siblings and, you know, do what they do. But on my mom's side, I guess it was kind of more like, oh man, just kind of the same thing. Like, yeah, we're very competitive. So yeah, it was a really competitive household.
How did you end up deciding on Texas?
So Texas was actually my last visit out of all of my college visits. Going into my senior year, I didn't want to put too much into college visits, honestly. I was just like, the five schools that reach out to me first are the five schools I'm going to visit because I don't want to put too much in it. It's my last year. I just want to focus on my season. You know, I didn't want to do too much. So obviously Texas reached out. Like I said, my last visit. And when I went there, I just kind of like fell in love with everything, like the program, the team, the coach, the coaching staff. Like it just was great. And I actually went there my junior year to compete at Texas Relays. And I won that year too. So I was just like, yeah, I think this might be home.
The facilities there are beautiful. And especially looking at the names that are sometimes on that board, especially because I think Sonia Richards Ross is like all over it. Did that do anything for you in sort of like motivation, especially though, like being focused in the 1-2, did you ever kind of give a thought to that 400 record?
No, never considered the 400, but, no, I honestly, if I can be honest, I knew nothing about Texas history before I went there. As I was there, I learned so much about Texas track and field. Like they have some real heavy hitters like to come out of there. So I was like, wow, like I've really made a great decision.
That's sometimes a beautiful thing to come into. It's just sort of like a clean slate and then learning as you go. As far as being like a fan of the sport, mm-hmm. growing up, was it something that you even like paid attention to at the highest level, or when did that moment start to click and you realize that, oh, there are people who do this for a living and that the highest stage for this is the Olympics?
Yeah. Well, and I want to say it started in high school, my freshman year. One of my teachers, actually Mushami Robinson, she went to Texas and is a 4x4 gold medalist USA gold medalist, and she kind of introduced me to that world, like, and of like that world of like Olympian, of that headspace of like, you can, if you really like dedicate yourself, you can be an Olympian, you can set that goal. So from there, I just kind of was connected to other Olympians and other elite coaches and just kind of like got that education, really. And now I'm here.
Yeah.
So I feel like it was always destined, honestly. Like I've been talking about this for years and my dad always declared it on me that I, you know, would be an Olympian. So
from my understanding, he was a big Florida guy. Was this something that he had to kind of let go a little bit, let you go to Texas?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, he actually was. But once I committed to Texas, he was a Longhorn. He actually had the Longhorn tattoo on him too. He got it on him. So yeah, he wanted me to go to Florida UF, but I was like, oh, Dad, I don't know if I want to be that close to home.
You win your first NCAA title in the 60 meters in March 2016. I guess, what was that moment like? Because it happened very, very early on in your Texas career.
Yes, I was like, I feel like it was kind of like the moment when I ran at pre this 2 weeks ago. I was like, wow, like I can do this. Like it was just kind of like a confirmation, like, okay, yeah, you're on the right track. Like, yeah, yeah, that was a really special moment for me because, like, obviously, like, I was on the radar. The same situation, was on the radar, wasn't, you know, really making no noise like that. Everybody knew I was fast coming to high school, but nobody knew I was, like, that fast. Shoot, I didn't even really understand my speed either, but but yeah, just to come out of high school and win a national championship, set a record, like, yeah, it definitely set the tone for what I was going to do throughout my career.
I like how you put it, that under the radar, some athletes like thrive in that position as opposed to having the spotlight on them. Is that something that you've kind of picked up on, the fact that you like just kind of being, all right, you can always have the favorites. I'll surprise you as a dark horse.
I mean, I don't do that intentionally. Like, it's not something that I intentionally do. But it definitely gave me the perspective of just remain humble, just do your work, obviously my time was going to come when it comes. Like, it definitely kept me grounded. And also it made me understand that there are women out there or girls out there that want to take my position. So I have to always work just as hard or even harder to, you know, earn my spot. And mm-hmm. I feel like that mentality definitely has carried me on to where I am now.
Winning an NCAA title in the 60, I'm kind of curious, the 60 versus the 100. And like, kind of, can you break that, the difference between the two races down for me? Because I remember having this conversation with Jared Eaton on the podcast a couple months back about how he's a really good 60 meter hurdle guy indoors and has just always been missing. He's been like fourth or fifth at USA's in the 110 hurdles when it comes to being outdoors. Yeah. And the translation between the two events, he's like, yeah, you just have to have the strength to put that race together in the second half. Mm-hmm. Can you break that down for, you know, the people who aren't as familiar in the sprints as to like, can someone like Desiree Bryant is also really good at 60 and 100 outdoors, yeah. But it's not a one-for-one translation that if you're good in the 60, you're going to be good in the 100. Sometimes is it similar to the hurdles where it's like that strength factor in the closing stages of the race is what you need to build upon?
Yeah, that speed endurance definitely is so important. And that's something I'm trying to master myself too. That last like 40, 30 meters is key. It's keeping that momentum that you build up from your drive phase out of that. So yeah, speed endurance, speed mechanics, like all of that is so important for that last 30. Cause that, I feel like the last 30, last 40 is what wins races. And that's honestly something that me and my coach have been working on this past year, and I'm still trying to learn it, honestly. And also I was dealing with some like weight fluctuations or challenges, so understanding how to move my mass in that particular part of the race was actually important too. So yeah, like you said, the 60, sometimes that speed or the speed endurance doesn't translate into the 100, and you know, you just have to figure out or just have the, you know, right coach that understands that and how to, you know, transition you out for outdoor.
I love how you use the word endurance to refer to like 30 meters, because like for a distance runner, it's like endurance means like an extra 5K in distance and that kind of stuff. And that's like a long ways to go. And at 30 meters is just kind of like you blink your eyes for a bit and it's done.
And it's done. But like, I feel like sprinting can be so hard because you have to think, but not think, relax, but still, you know, that's why I tweeted the other day. I was like, track and field is such an art because, you know, we move our bodies in such a specific way. And, you know, people sometimes don't understand that, like, we're really just not running. We're trying to maximize our speed. We're trying to move faster than we've ever moved before every time we step on a line. So it takes a lot of dedication in practice and art, you know, to do that. So,
well, in particular, I think even looking back at the way some of like the Olympic races played out, maybe it was the Olympic final, that it's a 100 meter race, but it felt like there were like lead changes in that span of time. And I think that's just the what happens when you have people like Shelly Ann and Elaine both at the top of their game, that you can break it down by every 10 meters. And yeah, if you screenshot where people are at every 10 meters, it could look different than what you get at the finish line.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like, I mean, I was in it and I was just like, okay, I'm right there in the start. Then like they just started, whew, I was like, whoa, okay. I don't know where this gear is coming from, but I'm gonna try to go with y'all. But yeah, like, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. Like it can fluctuate. Like you just never know. Everybody has their strengths. Everybody has their weaknesses. And it in the 100 meter, you definitely can see that. So yeah.
I want to stay on your college career a little bit because we talked about your dad. In 2018, he passes away, and you've previously, like, I think, done interviews and spoken about how, like, it was really hard to deal with that and find the motivation to continue training and, like, getting to that high level. I guess, like, how did you navigate that point in your life?
Yeah. Like I said earlier, my support system definitely helped me. And at the time, the coaching staff at Texas definitely helped me as well. Actually, the Texas Tech coach now, Zach Glavish, he actually traveled with me to Orlando when I found out with my dad, because I was a track meet at the time when I found out that he passed. And that same night, he traveled with me all the way to Orlando and then flew right back to the meet. So that dedication to me definitely kind of kept my spirits up. And, you know, made me want to keep going. And also, you know, my family just kind of reminded me that, you know, my dad was obviously one of my biggest fans. So he wouldn't want me to stop. So I didn't. But also, I would say therapy. I went to therapy in 2019, my senior year, which helped so much with my thought process of, like, you know, how to process this, like where to put my energy into. And lastly, I would say this year, from I want to say January to May or March, no, March to May, I did a yoga teacher training. So now I have my yoga certification, and just being in that class of those ladies just kind of really helped my confidence and my mental, and it definitely translated to the track. So
that's awesome.
Thank you.
So people can, in I guess when you're back home in Texas, can have you like taught classes yet or anything?
I mean, during my training, I was teaching, but I kind of like stopped a little bit to focus on the trials, to focus on the Olympics, and then focus on pre. But definitely, when I get back to Austin, I'll probably might, you know, do something.
Yeah. It'd be cool for like people to be able to sign up and be like, oh yeah, no, I've got an Olympian teaching the class.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely consider it. I definitely want some more practice though, because I still have a little shyness in me when it comes to public speaking, but but definitely I think the practice would help.
So sticking in college for a little bit more, I found it so interesting you never won an NCAA title in the 100. Is that so weird to think about now?
You know, it just wasn't in the cards.
You got a bad draw, I think, in terms of just like the other competitors. Like you had for a while, I guess in the earlier years, you had a lot of the Oregon girls were like really good. Leah Hobbs, LSU. I mean, and then towards the end, in your senior year, I guess you get stuck with Sha'Carri coming around.
I mean, I'm not mad at it. Hey, like, I love competing, and I love competing against the best. So it just, you know, it didn't play out how I obviously people would imagine, but I'm not mad. I mean, I still was able to sign with Nike, still, you know, was able to go to the Olympics. So
all in all, like, people forget about the NCAA titles nowadays. If you just flash the title Olympian, it's fine. They'll assume you probably won an NCAA title.
Okay.
That race in particular, it was one on your home track, the senior year, you run 11 flat, 11.00, and you finished fourth, which would have probably won some of those previous years and like, or got second. What was so special, I guess, kind of like of that race? Everyone remembers the front with Sha'Carri winning. But I guess like what made that race so fast?
Oh man. Well, Texas has a great facility, obviously. Mm-hmm. We all know the track is definitely fast, but I would say for me specifically, my downfall was that I got complacent. I got, after running 10.99 and 22.51 at regionals a couple weeks before, I got so complacent. I was like, you know, I got this. Like, it's on my home track. You know, I'm running well. Like my weight's at a good, you know, good spot. I'm like, you know, I can slack off a little bit, and I slacked off too much. And I got way too complacent. And I just kind of like, I wouldn't say like let myself go, but I definitely like didn't focus on the main goal, which was to get an NCAA championship. And yeah, but I mean, Sha'Carri was just on one that day. She was, ooh, hey, all power to her, because she was moving. I was like, 10.70, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that was amazing. But yeah,
it was funny because I think like the week after Usain Bolt was here like in New York City, and I like brought it up to him, and he hadn't even heard of the result, and he goes, "What? Like someone ran the 10.71?" And I was like, "Yeah." And so he was kind of blown away, but by that whole thing. You know, you did mention sort of like having to focus on just, you know, yourself and what you can do in that race, in your basically on your own lane. I'm curious, and like to kind of touch on Sha'Carri, because she is like the biggest U.S. 100 meter star right now that like is known worldwide at this point. Yeah. When she's so, I would say, electric and like and such a big personality coming into the race, it's the pre-race antics, it's the post-race antics, is all that kind of stuff, and even sort of like lining up on that line. How do you minimize that noise? Just so that for you, is that all you can control and do is what is in the 100 meters ahead of you.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Honestly, I appreciate her bringing so much, attention to the sport. Cause I mean, I'm glad people are starting to see our hard work, but for me specifically, like you said, just kind of focusing on my own lane. I really believe this year I honed on to that and, didn't really worry about what the other women on the other lanes are doing, or like where they are, or like what they've done. It doesn't really matter. It matters what I do on the line in my lane that day. So yeah.
Is it tough when, like, you mentioned sort of a little bit of how at the Olympics the Jamaicans find the extra gear in the closing, like, you know, 20-30 meters, and it's hard to respond to that. Like, it's literally you also have to kind of like dig deep and try and find that gear. I'm kind of curious as to how that feels in the moment, like kind of when you're going up against people whose PRs are just, you know, a tad faster than you, but a tad in the sprints is a lot. And so, because Trayvon Bermell, I think I remember last year when I spoke to him, explained to me how, you know, when racing Bolt and Gatlin at times, like that's literally a rising tide lifting all boats. Everyone gets carried to a faster time. Is that sort of similarly like the hope that if you're just trying to hold on to someone ahead of you running 10.75, that maybe you end up running 10.8 low or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, just to go back to pre, I knew if I just kind of got out and was with the ladies, I would run fast. But honestly, my mentality going into races, like I said, was to focus on me and just try to get to the line first. Like the time will be what it is. Like I would say I learned this a lot from my coach now, Coach Flo, and Kendra Harrison, my training partner. She definitely like helped me understand that if you just race to win, the time's gonna be fast, regardless. Mm-hmm. Or the time is going to be what it is, because, you know, wins are they're important, but that's the goal. So I would say, yeah, just for me specifically, just racing to win is the main goal for every single race.
Is that kind of what fueled USA's 2019? After finishing fourth at NCAAs, you make it to the final at USA's. And first off, that was a windy one in Des Moines. You end up getting revenge there and get the win overall.
Yeah, I mean, and I wouldn't say it's revenge. It's more of just me kind of just proving to myself, like, yeah, like you can do this. Like, it's just another like little thing off of my, you know, goal sheet, just that I wanted to do. Actually, when I wrote down my goals in 2018, December, that was one of them. It was to, obviously, was to win an NCAA championship, which that didn't happen. But after postseason, I wanted to compete in Diamond Leagues. I wanted to win at USAs. I wanted to go to Doha. I wanted to, you know, get a medal in Doha. And I accomplished all of those goals. And like I said, it's kind of like a reassurance type of thing. Like, all right, just, you know, let's keep going. Let's keep doing what you're doing.
Is that a thing you do by yourself, or you also kind of talk over with coaches to like, here's what I'm going to write down?
Yeah. We actually have meetings every beginning of every season of what we want to accomplish and where we want to be at the end of the season. So yeah.
How is that in 2020? I guess you don't know what's going to end up happening in the world. You end up running, to stay on 2019 for a sec, first world championship experience. Like, overall, what'd you think?
Oh man, I was nervous. I'm not going to lie. I was really nervous. I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm here. I'm racing against some of the fastest women in the world. And I mean, obviously I'm one of them as well. So yeah, just to make that final was really special, but I was so young and so just in awe. But going into the Olympics this year, sorry to fast
forward. No, it's fine.
Going to the Olympics this year, I was like, I've raced against these women before. So all I have to do is kind of just line up and go.
Yeah, so seventh in 2019, is that sort of like, all right, if you were to give it a grade, it was an A, because one, you were happy to be there in the first place, and then two, to push the season that long all the way through September and come out seventh in the world. Overall, all in all, great job.
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly, if I can finish the season not injured and you know, having some longevity, I'm perfectly fine with how I do. I just know that I can do more the next year.
Okay, so then 2020, run a couple indoor races, the world shuts down. Now, this is where it gets totally interesting, because with distance runners, they're able to put on, you know, track meets and time trials and all that kind of stuff. And you're able to get like a barometer of like where people were at in terms of just their fitness. What did sprinters do all last year? Like, was there ever any sort of like all out 100 meter time trial that you did, or 200 time trial that you did last summer?
Oh gosh. Well, Flo had us training all year. We actually stopped in August.
Wow.
We stopped in August. We were training all summer in the hot sun, doing 200s and 150s and wicket runs and all of this stuff.
What's a wicket run?
Well, wickets are like the little mini hurdles.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we were doing that on the minute, just kind of just staying in shape. Because we, like you said, we didn't know what was happening. Mm-hmm. And I guess he just wanted us to keep our fitness just in case anything happened. But yeah, just, we were really still on our grind throughout we found the high school that the track was open, out in Austin, Texas, and, got a membership at a local gym. So we were able to, you know, find accommodations, but it was still kind of like uncertain, like, oh, okay, well, I guess I can chill this weekend because I don't have a meet or anything coming up. So yeah, it was kind of weird.
You guys didn't simulate like any sort of like pretend there was a track meet. You guys show up Saturday and like all out, you're going to do 100. Like, come on, tell me, because I've heard when I talked to Gatlin after pre, he was telling me, yeah, no, I've seen Shakira run 10.5 in practice. I'm like, okay, that could be him saying it. But like, have you guys, did last year at all, did you guys go all out at any point where you saw 10.8 something in practice?
I mean, I wouldn't say last year was like that. I feel like last year was just based off just trying to keep fitness. But this year, definitely. We definitely did some time trials. Yeah. But our time trials is, that's during the fall time. So yeah, I don't really have much on that.
when you're in the fall or even last summer, there's no temptation or at all to, has Flo ever made you go 400 just to see what you could do?
No, because he knows what I can do. I mean, I'll probably do like a 4x4 at Texas Relays next year, but no, he hasn't pushed me to that yet.
A quick break now to tell you a little bit about a new sponsor behind the podcast. It's Hustle Clean. You might remember them from when they helped sponsor some of the races and even the drone during the Trials of Miles qualifier series. Hustle Clean is a mission-driven self-care brand for the active lifestyle. It was created by athletes for high performers that want to do more and be more without compromise. The Hustle Clean body wipe is an extra large, durable, full body wipe designed to remove sweat, dirt, and body odor in moments when a shower is optimal but not possible. Their products are safe on sensitive skin, hypoallergenic, paraben-free, and infused with aloe vera, vitamin E, and witch hazel. Personally, I've loved using their lavender-scented one. I carry them in my bag for after my runs because we've all been in these situations. You finish a long run or a workout in the summer and the fall, and you want to meet your friends for brunch or dinner afterward, and you just don't have the time for a shower, you don't have the ability to get to one, the Hustle Clean body wipe holds you over. Get rid of that sweat, get yourself smelling good, toss on a t-shirt, and you're good to go. Hustle Clean is sold nationwide in Walmart, Target, and Amazon. Sidious Mag podcast listeners, listen up. Get a deal and save 10% off all of their products when you visit hustleclean.com and use code Sidious at checkout. That's C-I-T-I-U-S when you visit hustleclean.com. Okay, so this season, 2021,
yes.
You go into the trials of the season's best of 11:14, I think it was, right?
You might be correct. Yeah, because I didn't really. Yeah, 11:14. Yeah, right. Right.
Again, kind of flying under the radar a little bit, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Then you run 11:03 to snag third in the final. Did you think you had it when you crossed the finish line?
Yes.
You knew you made the team.
Yeah.
Well, because like the thing is, like with you and Jenna, like it was fairly close.
Yeah. But I mean, you can when you're on the line though, when you're crossing the line, you can feel when you like out dip somebody. So I knew that. I knew at least I got fourth. I was like, okay, relay team, you know, you get that. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. But
when I saw those circles on my name, I was like, oh, I made my first Olympic team with an individual. I was so happy. I was so happy. You don't understand.
That's amazing. Cause like, I completely forgot about that. The fact that sprinters can not sort of like rest on their laurels a little bit and like be complacent with like sixth place, but like you did know that like you were going to be an Olympian from the finish line, but it's just sort of like you were an Olympian in the relay plus like now you got to run individually.
Yes, that's, I feel like that's every like sprinter's dream, is to make it for your individual, you know. So I ran that prelim and I ran a windy 10:84. I was like, okay, this can happen. Like I can make this team in an individual. So that was the goal.
How do you sort of read off of, I guess you really do, or can you, I guess in the middle of like the 100 final at the trials, like read off of people's body language as to like, you know, who's around, like it's so fast to me, like just to even think about, like do you have any idea like how Sha'Carri is doing in her lane, or how you know, Jenna was doing in her lane, like, or is it just sort of like I just gotta get to that line as fast as I can?
Yeah, honestly, like that's pretty much what it is, just get to line as fast you can. Sometimes I'm like, when I run, I'm like, what just happened? Like, I don't even know what I just did. But then when I look back, like when I watch it back and stuff, it's like, okay, like I did this, I missed up here, I, you know, popped up too early, I, you know, didn't finish my drive phase. Like, you know, you analyze it like that. But during it, it's just like, go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Before the next race, like before like Olympics and that kind of stuff, how much did you look at something like the trials, or what do you study before you go into the Olympics?
Yeah, definitely practice stuff. When I flow pretty much records most, if not all, reps of our block starts, of our runs, and just kind of using that to, because if you know, if you do something in practice, you're gonna obviously do it at a meet. So just kind of using that data, because that's what it is, just data to help me out with my race.
All right. So we get to, well, before the Olympics, obviously there's big drama in the track and field world as the world learns about Sha'Carri's positive test. I mean, what was sort of like your reaction to all of the news? Because obviously like there was track fans everywhere in the world all of a sudden. Like the eyes of the world were on this sport because of, you know, the rules and how, you know, crazy it seemed to people. And there's nothing really that can be done to reverse like the decision at that point. Like she was going to be banned for a month. Now, is your sort of thinking at that point, I'm still going to do my thing. I got to step it up. I think I have a chance at the medals. And so like, how did you sort of process, you know, that whole attention on the women's 100 all of a sudden?
Yeah. It was a very, unfortunate event. And, you know, I wanted the best for her in that situation. I commend her for owning up to, you know, what happened and stuff like that. But yeah, like you said, like I just knew I still had business to handle, and I just tried to focus my energy into you know, competing in the 100.
You're, I think, one of the people I think on Twitter who was like really great about saying like, hey, like if you guys are really caring about, you know, track, watch this Diamond League we got next week, because there's still some really great women that are competing.
Yeah. Yes. Like, oh my gosh, there's so many different stories and testimonies of amazing women in track and field men and women. And, you know, I feel like we should definitely shine light into everybody, because everybody has a story. Everybody's been through a lot, and you never know who can relate to those stories as well. So, yeah, I'm a big advocate shining light on everyone.
Yeah, because, you know, the crazy part was, is just like watching as someone who knows track and is seeing like how everyone's reacting to all of this. It was sort of like everyone's getting a little carried away with the fact that like Sha'Carri was going to win the gold medal in Tokyo. And I was like, that's not as certain as like you guys think it is. It's like the Jamaican contingent is super strong. Actually, 4 minutes ago, as we're recording this, Shelly-Ann just tweeted Paris 2024 with like the thinking emoji. So now you've got that to worry about. I'm sorry to break that news to you right now.
I wouldn't be a competitor if I didn't think everybody was going to be on their A game. And also Sha'Carri, like, I know she's going to be on her A game as well these next couple of years. So I don't count anybody out at all.
Cause yeah.
I mean, obviously I'm one of those people that can, you know, show up at the right time, and anybody can show up at the right time. So yeah.
When you do get to the Olympics, what was sort of your first Olympic Village experience like? One, I guess you show up and you realize that these cardboard beds are actually real.
Yeah, I actually got a picture from one of my friends, and she's like, "Yeah, this is how the rooms are gonna look." I was like, "Oh, joy!" but yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I know that the experience is probably really different compared to the other Olympic games. Mm-hmm. Because I've talked to other Olympians as well, and they said, yeah, we would usually like go out to the village and like, you know, talk to other countries and hang out with other countries and stuff. But I still feel like I got a great experience as well out of it. I spent a lot of time with my teammates. We kind of just like hung out and went to, because we had a practice facility dedicated to Team USA. Mm-hmm. So hung out there. Oh, man. Yeah,
it's just like a lot of hanging out, I feel like, this time.
Yeah, like we were really just chilling. Like it was, we were really just chilling. Like it was a good vibe.
So it's funny because I was just remembering that, like, how was the sleep on those cardboard beds? Now that I have like the chance to ask someone who was there, because it was funny to me that following along like on Instagram stories, Allison Felix ended up getting like a bed shipped from Amazon Japan into her place just to get better sleep. But that's one of the perks of having like 11 Olympic medals, and it's okay to do that. But
actually, though, everybody had that access. Everybody had access to Amazon. So anybody could have gotten
Yeah.
I think a couple people from other sports got their mattress pads.
You should have just been like, hey, if you're done competing, just pass that mattress over.
Right. Right. but uh But yeah, the bed was pretty, it was pretty tough. My back definitely was hurting. I was at the chiropractor every day. but you know, I try not to complain about it and stuff, because you know, I'm at the Olympics, like what much is there to complain about?
One of the other things too that I is updating on Twitter, the OLY that you add to like your name. Did you do that before or after you got to Tokyo?
After I competed, actually, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna.
Now it's legit.
Yeah, it's. I did it. I competed. I ran. I got a medal. Like, I'm an Olympic medalist.
Yeah.
It's. So I was like, okay, I can finally like put this on my name.
The Olympic medal, have you put it to any use? Like, have you gotten like free, you know, coffee at Starbucks, free Chick-fil-A somewhere, or something like that?
Oh man. I feel like my mom is probably using that more than me. I want to say she was out somewhere and she had her like my darn Olympian shirt on or whatever, and somebody gave her pay for her coffee or something like that.
But, oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, I don't really say it that much.
Yeah.
But I could probably see myself using it later on.
Yeah, pull that card at some point. So actually competing at the Olympics, 10.98 PR in the semis. Mm-hmm. How'd you feel about that?
That race was so technically terrible. I was like, how did I just
really?
Yes. As I was running it, I felt myself straining. And I was like, I was literally like running. I was like, what's happening right now? And then when I crossed the finish line, I was like, I just went 10.98. Like, what? Yeah, I think, and I think I messed up my hamstring a little bit in that race too. I'm not gonna lie. So yeah, that race was really all over the place.
Well, then you're the only American to move on to the finals. And so now with, you know, a little hamstring twinge or whatever it was, and like not being like as technically sound, how are you approaching the finals?
I was just like, you know, I'm just gonna see what my body does today. You know, I'm just gonna show up and, you know, be there. But but yeah, I actually, in that race when I got out, because I got out very well, and I think that's the best start I've ever had, like ever. And I think my body kind of like shocked itself. And my like hip kind of shift a little bit. I literally felt my hip shift mid race. And I like subconsciously was like, okay, let's like not do too much right now. But yeah, I still tried my best and tried very hard to, you know, finish that race as strong as I could. So, hey, I gave it my best that day.
Did you in the final again, another seventh place finish? Seven seems to be, I guess, like your lucky number in these finals. How did you realize it was that crazy fast up in the front?
When I crossed the finish line and I saw 10.6, I was like, huh? I was like, what? same situation as NCAAs. I was like, what is happening right now? but yeah, I was like, wow, like congrats to her. Like, honestly, congrats to all the Jamaicans. Like, to have a sweep, that's crazy. Like that's something I can like all dream to do, even, yeah, you know, later on in my career. Hopefully in 2024, or even, you know, in hopefully in LA in 2028, that would be kind of cool. But yeah, I was really happy for them.
Yeah, should we call like Tiana Daniels says USA sweep LA 2028? But we actually, then you know what's gonna happen? Jamaicans will clip this and then please, the shade.
Don't.
Because that's one thing I've learned about just in the past couple weeks is the Caribbean shade on Twitter.
Hey,
it's ruthless.
It's ruthless, but I love the energy though. I love the passion. I'm not gonna lie. I love the passion from all sides. Like, yeah, let's just feed some more energy and
say, yeah. All right, so we're not calling that shot, but we're just saying like it would be nice.
It would be very nice. Anything can happen, but yeah, we're not calling it.
Yeah, we're not calling it. going into the pre-classic, I guess, it was very similar, I guess, to at this point. The race was billed as the big what if. We're going to get our answer to what if Sha'Carri had been at the Olympics. And instead, we ended up getting another Jamaican sweep. Sha'Carri gets last, and kind of in my assessment of it and watching the race, it looked like shut it down, like once you realize that this race was kind of getting away from her. Then afterwards, it really escalates just in terms of just like the Jamaicans don't want to talk about Sha'Carri. Obviously, like they want a lot of the spotlight and attention on what they just did, for sure, deservedly so. Sha'Carri gets interviewed by NBC. They don't interview Elaine, who just ran, you know, the second fastest time in history. There's very little sort of like attention brought on to you as well. And I think you had a great tweet, I think, at the end of it. And you said, like, I've been okay. My thought process is I can't make someone change how they want to view me. I just go about handling my business and going about my day. I don't believe in taking the light off anyone else so that I can shine. So all in all, the pre-classic was just so dramatic, I feel like.
It was all over the place. Honestly, like in that situation, I feel like everything should be highlighted. I feel like Sha'Carri should have her part. I feel like the Jamaicans should have their part. I feel like Elaine should have her part. And, you know, I feel like I should have my part. There, like you said, it was all over the place. Like, I feel like it was really hard to hone on to one thing because nothing really happened how it was supposed to. Mm-hmm. And that's how track and field is. Like, it's unpredictable. You really can't predict what's going to happen on that day. You can try to, but you can maybe get close, but it's, you know, nobody actually like knows. So yeah.
For a 10-second race, it was the most dramatic thing I've seen, I think, this season.
I could attest to that. I was in it. Yeah, I was like, yeah, yeah. When she crossed the line and it said 10:54, I was like, what did I just run? Because if she ran 10:54, I must have ran something crazy. And
yeah,
to see that I was this close to 10:07. Oh, I was like, yes, the sky's the limit. I'm so excited.
What is 0.04 seconds? Is that just blinking?
Yeah. That's like I said, that's that speed endurance. That's that last 30, that last 20. That's that little notch you need to turn.
Being in that race and having probably watched it a couple of times now, what is separating Elaine and Shelly-Ann from everyone else right now? Like, what's their strongest part of each one of their races?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, for both of them, just to sum it up from a person that, you know, loves track and field, I feel like their experience of being on the line, being of high caliber, you know, understanding themselves and their body as women, and that's, I feel like that's really what Sharika as well, because we can talk about her too. I mean, she's amazing. What?
Dropping down from 400 and now taking names in the 100?
Exactly. It's just like, I really feel like that experience helps so much when it comes to these types of races and that type of pressure, because you don't, like, as the athletes, you can't put pressure on yourself because that's going to just, you know, mess up your race and where you are and where you want to go. So yeah, I would definitely like check it up to experience for sure.
You had your mom in the stands for at pre-classic. My friend Adrian was one of the guys who like snapped the photos and like one of the ones that you posted. It was such a beautiful moment.
Yeah, it really, oh man. And the crazy thing is my mom really was supposed to come. Like, she came at the last minute. We were like, I was like, okay, mom, you can come. Like, it's the last meet. Like, you know, I would love for you to be here. And so she came, and also my aunt came too, but it wasn't shown, but she came as well. And I was really happy my mom was there, because I don't know what I would have done if she wasn't there. I probably would have called her as soon as I finished. But like, yeah. But I was so happy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just so much sweeter because of, given how Tokyo was, it was just an empty stadium.
Yeah. And I guess that extra support, I feel like, helped me run fast as well, or comforted me in a little bit. In that moment too. So yeah, just having that mother love is always great.
You've, I think in this video that you did with the Longhorn Network back in college, you have that voicemail saved of your dad. How often do you go back and listen to it, like before races nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I probably listen to that voicemail maybe like now, like once a year. I probably listen to it once a year just to kind of be like reminded of his voice and stuff like that. Because, you know, like I said, my dad was a huge part of like my track career and my life, obviously. So,
love it. So next year, now you get your mom in the stands again, possibly at the World Championships in Eugene, and hopefully improve upon like a seventh place finish, maybe get the podium. Yeah. Okay. Who knows? Mm-hmm. How do you envision, I guess, what do you want to accomplish next year? I know it's so quick to be like, all right, we just wrapped up this season. What do you want to do next year? But where's your head at right now with that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's pretty much the main goal, is just to improve, just kind of take the momentum of how I finished off this year and bring it into indoor next year for indoor worlds and then outdoor worlds and getting ready for all of that. So yeah, just I want to say, yeah, the word I guess next year is just improve.
Love it. All right, so we got the final questions that I ask every guest. First one is, what's the meanest thing you've read about yourself on Let'sRun.com? Doesn't do sprints as much, but like, and like the message boards as much. So I'm going to just say on Twitter in general, especially recently, because like it's been so fascinating to me. I've picked up like 500 Jamaican followers as a result of tweeting videos of Shellyann. Shout out to them. I love them.
Yes, I love them. Shout out to them.
Meanest thing you've read about yourself online.
Oh man, I think somebody was talking about just sprints or like us in general, and they were like, oh, Tiana can't run, forget about her. And I was just like, oh, okay. I thought it was funny. I think it's so funny when people try to put limitations on athletes. I think that is hilarious, because it's like, wow, like you really are declaring negativity on somebody. Like, what did they do to you? But yeah, I would say that.
My favorite person who claps back at it is Fred Curley. Like, he's just so good at it.
That's a Fred, my dog. Like, Fred will show up, okay? Like, I appreciate Fred's energy.
Yeah. One of my friends, Kyle, who kind of like co-hosts this podcast with me on occasion, he's like, I think he said, when do I have to tweet that like Fred Curley won't break the mile world record just so that he can go out and do it?
I think he probably will set that goal.
Yeah. Second question I ask every guest, what's the funniest drug testing story you have?
Oh man, funniest drug testing story. Oh, that's a great one. Oh man, I don't know.
Are you just efficient at it? Like, you're just good at it? They come in, good to go?
Good to go. My 60 minute window is like at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I'm like, okay, I know I'm going to be home at 5 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah, five or 6 o'clock in the morning. And yeah, just.
That's good. Yeah. You're just all business when it comes to it.
Yeah, honestly, it's just like, you know what? I know why you're here. Let's just go bathroom and yeah.
If you could go on a run anywhere in the world with anyone from history, they don't have to be a real person. They don't even have to be a runner. Assuming they could hold a nice little conversational pace with you, where would the run take place and who would it be with?
This is so random, but the Great Wall of China.
I think. Great Wall of China, cool.
I think I would love to do that. The view will probably be crazy and beautiful.
They do a marathon on there every year. It's 26 miles of like stairs and all that kind of stuff. I would never do it.
I can walk. And with who? Oh man, there's so many people that I would love to have a conversation with. I would say Evelyn Ashford.
Okay.
I love her. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. I feel like her story is kind of similar to mine, that underdog, still kind of making noise type person. So yeah, I would say definitely Evelyn Ashford.
Now, how long is this run? Because I'm trying to think, like, for a 100 meter specialist, How often, like, when's the last time you went out for like a 1 mile run or like beyond that?
Fall 2020, I think. And it wasn't even a mile. I don't even think I made a mile. I just went on a run for 8 minutes. I probably ran a mile. But I mean, I go on walks. I love going on 20-minute walks. That's my thing every day, 20-minute walks.
What's the price tag for you to run a marathon? Like, what would someone have to pay you to do it?
Right now?
Yeah.
Right now in my life? Ooh. Oh, man, a lot of money. If I'm doing it for charity or something, I would do it.
Yeah. That'd be cool, is to get like a 100-meter specialist to run, you know, the New York City Marathon or something like that. And you raise probably like a lot of money in the process, but just like the big, like, how long is it going to take them is the question.
It will take me a long time. We're going to be there for hours.
All right. Final question I've got is nothing to do with running. You get 25 shots from half court. Mm-hmm. If you make one, you win $25 million. If you don't make any, you go to jail for 25 years. Would you attempt the shots?
Oh, no.
Smart.
No amount of money is worth 20, but I mean, I'm bound to make one. But then also, if 25 shots, you'll get tired.
And the pressure that comes when you keep missing.
Yes. No amount of money is worth going to jail for 25 years. I'm sorry.
I agree. That's a smart answer. But, you know, there's some crazy people who have come on this show and have said, yeah, I'll take them no matter what.
I know.
Don't change your mind. Just stick with it. Your gut is telling you no. Tiana, thank you so much for doing this. This is a lot of fun. And I'm glad I got to know you a little bit better. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot more people who listen to this and get to know you as well. And now they're going to be more invested and know a little bit more about you in the 100. And hopefully we share that spotlight, I think, a little bit more. And that's the goal that a lot of people have been pushing for.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for having me.
The City of Smack Podcast is a production of the City of Smack Podcast Network. It is produced and edited by Mike Zerzolo. Special thanks to Woot for sponsoring the podcast. Join the craze for the best fitness wearable and activity tracker on the market. Go to Woot.com and use code Sidious at checkout to join for free and save 15%. Sleep better, recover faster, and run faster. Get to the starting line healthy with Woot. Did you enjoy this episode enough to dish out a couple bucks? Support City of Smack by pledging any dollar amount over on patreon.com/SidiousMag. To join our loyal legion of backers who keep this show going strong. If you're on your phone right now, you can also open up the Venmo app and hit us with a one-time donation to @SidiousMag. We've also got merch over on SidiousMag.com. Any way you can show your support goes a long way. Thanks for listening. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running. Legs are feeling good. See you next time.